My guest today is Commander Mark Reeves of the Indian Health Service. He's the CIO and Director of IT. Commander Reeves, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's great to have you.
So let's just start some beginnings. You're fairly new as the CIO of Indian Health Service, though it's been a couple years since I've had the CIO on my show. So tell us a little bit about your background. How long have you been here at the Indian Health Service?
I took over as CIO in September of 2014, just last fall. You know, I started my career with the Indian Health Service at the IHS Hospital in Claremore, Oklahoma. My claim to fame is that I started out as a user support tech, the very basic help desk kind of guy. I've worked my way all the way up to CIO, so I've had I'm the first person within the IHS to have done that. I went from user support tech to the IT manager at the hospital. It's a great facility in that it had inpatient, outpatient, emergency room. We had a dental clinic there, so I got a broad spectrum of the care that we deliver. I left there and a couple of years after I'd been there, urban manager, went to the area office in Oklahoma City. It's the IHS area office where I was the area security officer. I managed federal security for 14 federal facilities. In 2008, I came to Rockville under our previous CIO, Dr. Terry Cullen, and eventually became the director of IT operations. That's our infrastructure kind of stuff. For her, and then in 2013 became the deputy under Dr. Hayes. As I mentioned, I'm the first CIO to progress from entry-level tech to CIO, but you know, I hope we can bring on a summer intern who will take that career path a step further through our Generation I, or Generation Indigenous Initiative that the president announced. It's focused on improving the lives of Native youth by removing the barriers that stand between Native youth and their opportunity to succeed. The initiative takes on a comprehensive and culturally appropriate approach to ensure all Native young people can reach their full potential. And as part of GenI, the IHS is initiating a paid internship program with diverse areas focused on youth across all of IHS-operated programs. The implementation of this is part of this is the Pathways program, which will support skill building, professional leadership development, economic support. I hope to bring on an intern to help us over the summer and then expose them to what we do and the great things we're doing here. But prior to becoming CIO, I obtained a master's in science in information systems, and then this May I completed my dissertation and received a Doctor of Science degree in information systems and communication from Robert Morris University. This position, the CIO position, allows me to bring together all my academic training and then the practical work experience I gained through my time in the organization.
So very cool. I mean, you hear once in a while I run into people in the IT community, in the federal community, who started at the GS3 or the GS5. Karen Evans, if you remember her when she was at OMB, she always would say, well, I started as a, you know, entry GS5 and I worked my way to federal CIO. So your story is almost as good as hers. How did you end up at Indian Health Service from the beginning? Was it just the job you got out of college, so to speak, or was there something else that drew you there? A lot of times I find that people have either a family connection or some other connection.
There is a family connection. I'm a member of the Crow Creek Band of the Sioux Tribe of South Dakota. I have relatives who either work or get care through the IHS. I had been working in another industry, in the insurance industry. I was doing financial upload software for them. This position came open at the hospital, and I took it and have kind of never looked back, I guess, in a way, if you will. One of the very first IT tech conferences I ever went to, I'm walking into the conference, and I look up, and I saw a cousin of mine who I had not seen in probably a decade or more. And so it's fantastic to have both that connection as well as the satisfaction of the work itself.
I think it's interesting. I remember talking to a CIO once who said, well, I love flying planes, and I love IT, so I got a job at the FAA CIO because it all came together. I mean, a very similar way, you know, for you, obviously, serving the Indian health community. I want to talk more about the GenI initiative. I think that's fascinating a little bit. You just talked about bringing in an intern. What's the timing? Obviously, someone in the technology field. Just give me some thoughts about how that process will work.
It is an initiative that's across the IHS as a whole, not only in my office where we would be looking for someone who had an aptitude or an interest in technology, but we are also in other facilities, IHS facilities, where they would bring on someone similar. We have over 400 facilities across the United States. We have area offices. There's opportunities for Native youth not only in IT programs, but in other health-related programs as well.
All right, that's fascinating. I think it's a great initiative to open the door. for people to experience the federal government, experience all the things that you at the IHS does, but also across the government. I want to go back to your CIO. You support the mission of the Indian Health Service. Talk a little bit about your role there. Where does the CIO fall into the mission support, but also what kind of CIO are you? Are you a strategy versus are you an operations guy? It sounds like you got a little operations, but a lot of times you probably have to step into that strategy role as well.
Yeah, I do. You know, my office is currently in putting together a strategic plan for our IT community for the next 5 years. It's one of the things I wanted to do when I stepped in. We completed an IT human capital plan. Now we're completing a IT strategy, and then along with that, a communication strategy. So that was part of my building block, was to get the people, set the direction, and then talk about where we're going. And those are the three things that I've been focused on. So I guess in that sense, I've had to become a strategy person. I didn't, but all my background is either in security and operations. But along with that, you know, about 60% of what my organization does, my IT organization, is related to health IT and the delivery of care. As an IT shop and a federal health delivery organization, which serves American Indians and Alaska Natives, our focus has to be, of course, on the agency priorities, which are to renew and strengthen our partnership with tribes, to reform the IHS, improve quality and access to care, and to make our work accountable, transparent, fair, and inclusive. So everything we do is aimed at the delivery of care. We don't do IT for IT's sake. We do IT to help improve the care of Native Americans.
Talk a little bit about that IT-HR plan a little bit. I know you kind of are dipping into the priorities a little bit, but and we'll get to that in a big way. But that was your first thing, was look at what kind of skill sets you have and what kind of skill sets you need. And then that will, I imagine, lead you to, okay, what's our strategy to get to the, from the as-is to the to-be, right? Let's get a little enterprise architecture talk.
Right. So that was the part of the thing. Okay, do we set the strategy first? Which, you know, of course, none of this is done in a, we can't put the pause button on the organization. The organization is moving along, and so but we had looked at what is our skill set, what assets do we have, what systems are we running, what do we need to do to support the next 5 years, the next decade, the next 50 years. But you know, one of the things, not only within our headquarters operations, but also what's at the area level and at the local facility level, is what does our human capital landscape look like out there? What training do they need? What skills do we have that we need perhaps to either use or develop? And so getting a good picture of the organization, the IT organization that I'm leading, is what was my first step. And then along with that, we're looking around at the folks who are not only in my organization, but other aspects of the IHS, saying, where do you need us to go? How can we support you and how can we help you? One of the things I want to do specifically is to sell the value of what we're doing. IT is an expense if it's just a box running in the corner, but if it helps the patient and helps the provider, it delivers in the delivery of care, it adds value to the organization.
When you looked around at the skill sets, the common refrain I hear from most CIOs, security first, project management second, and then the kind of some of the other skills, whether it's architecture or program management. Did you find the same things, or because you're so focused on the health IT world, you needed other skills that maybe are atypical than compared to what other CIOs may say?
Because we protect our patient data and we want to focus on that, security is truly a concern. It's a concern, I'm sure, of every CIO, no matter what they do. In selling the value, what I hope to be able to pull together is not only is a group of skilled IT professionals, but those who can talk with a doctor or talk with a nurse and say, how can I make your job or your delivery of care more meaningful, more appropriate, or better?
That is very similar to what I'm hearing across the government from a customer service perspective. I mean, that's what we're talking about here in many ways, is your customers are doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals. So are you hiring people who have that cross background, IT and healthcare?
My organization employs a lot of healthcare professionals. We pharmacists, nurses, and I have a chief medical information officer, CMIO, in my organization. That's a new position. We have a Dr. Michael Tote, who's serving in that capacity right now on an acting basis. We'll soon be advertising for that as a formal position, and we like having that level of input. Most of the folks I have, they're fantastic professionals. They have an aptitude towards IT, and it's no longer the developer sitting behind a wall somewhere cranking out code. They work very closely with, for example, a nurse who can interpret what's going to happen at the clinic.
Is that something that you're doing to change the way your office is set up? Let me just offer you an example. At a VA, for instance, they looked at, okay, what's the line of sight that we have? What's the customer service areas? And they said, we're going to hire someone that deals with product development. We're going to hire someone that deals with security. We're going to have someone, a customer service person. Is that the way you guys are looking at this? You're much smaller than VA, I know, but still that idea of making sure you have someone who's the owner of that, say, mission area when it comes to IT.
Right. You know, you're funny you mentioned the VA. Our former CIO, Dr. Teresa Cullen, is the director of health informatics over there, and she was the one who brought me into this, into the headquarters of IHS, and I learned a lot from her, and I saw how she was able to, in her own skill set, was able to manage the site as a provider and direct the IT organization. So it was basically over her model, if you will, that I've kind of extended that now and shaped our organization.
All right, very nice. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some more about your priorities. My guest today is Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. Now, Commander Reeves, before we took a break, we were talking a lot about your background. We talked a lot about the kind of the way your office is set up. One of the things you mentioned was a new role that you just really brought on board, a Chief Medical Information Officer. Talk a little bit about what that role is. You said it's just the person who's acting now, but you're looking for a permanent person in the near future. Give me a sense of what that person does.
Well, in the past, my organization was broke out into sort of four main buckets. We had a program management office. We have a security office, which you'd expect to find in almost any IT organization. We had an IT operations group, and they ran sort of infrastructure, which is the network and email and that kind of thing. When we have a health IT group, which is a large portion of our organization, a lot of developers, and we've hired some healthcare professionals into that group, we'd like to actually break that out and have an informatics group, a health informatics group, and that's the group that the CMIO, or Chief Medical Information Officer, would run. Health informatics is everything from help us develop and configure the software so that it's more meaningful for healthcare providers, but also once the data or once the systems run, helping interpret what comes out so to improve the delivery of care. As an organization, we run, develop, run, and administer our own electronic health record system, which is a derivative or a cousin to the VA's VISTA system. We do a lot of customization on it. Our patient population is different than that of the VA and also the DOD, whose current system, the ALTA system, is currently called a cousin to or related to our resource and patient management system, or RPMS. When I talk about customization, you know, we do some things like, for example, different than the VA, because the VA doesn't have to do well child kind of stuff. They have an older population, so we have a cradle to grave spectrum of care, and our systems have to be able to adapt to the delivery care for those groups.
Health informatics is definitely a growing area. I know the Food and Drug Administration, at one time they had a CIO who was also their head of health informatics. NIH, I know they have someone in health informatics. Is that where the big data piece comes in? I definitely want to talk about big data, but is that why you're breaking it out, because of the tools and the really focus over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years in the IT community around big data? Or is it just part of the evolution, really?
It's more of the evolution. We want to do things with big data. We're not there yet. We also want to do some things around, for example, cloud. Right now, we don't have an active project around cloud computing. Cloud initiatives are difficult for the Indian Health Service, as we serve a predominantly rural population where access to broadband, internet is still a challenge. And that's not just the communities themselves, that's access at our facilities. You know, in an open letter in January of 2015 to Senator Maria Cantwell, the FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, wrote that he'd personally seen a lack of broadband in Indian country, and it had created a history of isolation, which has limited economic and educational opportunities. And in the delivery of care, we fight some of those same battles. According to the FCC website, you know, they're saying that there's probably less in tribal lands, less than 10% of the areas are served by broadband. And actually, the FCC says probably closer to 5 or 8%, which is compared to 65% nationwide.
I definitely want to go back into cloud. Before we get there, let me just real quick, is there a timing to hire the new chief medical information officer?
Right. We're hoping to have a job vacancy announcement out within this month, if not perhaps, by July. You know, that person will help our IT professionals interpret what's needed out in the clinics. We're working on the largest, perhaps, customization and upgrades to our electronic health record system that we've ever undertaken. Our electronic health record system is really comprised of over 80 different applications, which is pharmacy and billing and electronic or emergency room and OB and all this stuff. It takes someone with that kind of knowledge to be able to help us interpret what's needed.
All right, well, let's just jump into your priorities because you started to give us some heads up. The RPMS is one big one, cradle to grave. Across the spectrum of care, you talked about the health record system, and you just mentioned the huge upgrade. Talk a little bit about what that upgrade means, and what are some of the things you're looking to do short-term, long-term?
Our two biggest initiatives right now are the deployment of electronic health record enhancements. As I mentioned, it's the largest we've ever done, which includes assisting our area offices and the local facilities in their support of the upgrades once they're released and installed. It's a host of new capabilities which will greatly improve access to essential information and communication between patients and providers. Examples include, for example, a personal health record, which will enable patients to view and download information from their medical record in any participating federal or tribal facility. It includes a secure email service, which will allow patients to exchange messages with their provider securely, and a participation in a health information exchange, which will enable providers to view patient information from facilities within and external to the Indian Health System. Now, that's the EHR enhancements. Along with that, we have our ICD-10 implementation, and that's going well. ICD-10 is not a small effort, and it's not a small effort to get ready for this, because it's more than a technology change. The whole U.S. healthcare delivery system will need to be ready by October 1st when it rolls around. I should add, I guess, ICD-10 is the International Classification of Diseases version 10. It's a new version of codes used by healthcare providers and their support staff, especially medical billers and coders, to classify patients' medical conditions and procedures. And the codes will enable more accurate billing and are essential for maintaining revenue. ICD-10 replaces ICD-9, and it will be done nationwide by all federal and non-federal providers, third-party payers, intermediaries, and it's effective October 1st, 2015. The number of codes has increased significantly to allow for more precise descriptions of conditions and procedures, and are in an alphanumeric format. They're slightly different, which will accommodate a larger set of codes now. Since today's medical billing processes are mostly automated, the update to ICD-10 requires updating software and testing the software to make sure it's transmitting the codes correctly. You know, given the number of steps in a medical billing process, the number of people involved in the process, and the large impact of software applications, the upgrade and testing process is very, very complex. As I mentioned, it impacts all HIPAA or Health Information Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act covered entities, and the implementation was delayed twice, once in 2013 by Health and Human Services, Department of Health and Human Services, and then a second time in 2014 by Congress, but there's doesn't look like there'll be a delay this time. We're pressing ahead with it.
All right, so a lot going on just in the electronic health record area. Let me back up, because I think the ICD-10 is fascinating. I'm glad you were able to explain what it was, because that was going to be my next question, because I'm not sure my audience always knows what that is. The initiatives itself, the EHR enhancements, upgrades, this is something that it's not a switch you turn on, turn off. It's not something that you say, we're good for today, we'll worry about tomorrow. I mean, it's a constant. So what is changing? Is it just because of the way the technology is changing? We talked earlier about cloud a little bit, but cloud maybe doesn't play a role in this like you would say that it does with other agency modernization plans. So what's the impetus to upgrade? And then give me some more about how you're going about it.
Our RPMS system, which is it's a suite of over 80 applications. And we're really proud of our electronic health record system, RPMS. In the past few years, it's won two Davies Awards. It won an HHS Innovate Award. And
give me a sense of what has to get done for upgrade, because is it, for instance, written an old client server and now it's moving to a more of a web app? Can you give me a sense of the technology change that's happening? I mean, for instance, the secure email is a perfect example of something that maybe couldn't have been done 5 or 7 years ago.
Our RPMS as it exists right now across our organization is a client server model. And we have to actually kind of stick to that because of the problems with bandwidth out in the rural areas. Now, to meet some of the new capabilities that we're bringing to it, we're pulling all of those together in a larger network, which includes, for example, something like creating a master patient index so that if your patient has a record at one facility, they can match with the same with a similar record at another facility and then bring those records together so that you have a continuum of the patient record and facilitate care.
It's interesting, the broadband challenges, because you'd think, well, can't you just use satellite or can't you just whatever the vendors will tell you? So if you don't have that access through broadband, then is everything through the what we'll call hardwire, meaning from the lack of a better word, telephone pole, which I know it's not the case anymore, to the building?
We work closely with our facilities who look at their telco provider. But it's, you know, it's really last mile challenges. We can build a wire all the way out to a certain point or Verizon or whomever the provider is can go all the way out, but it's really that last mile where it's the local telco who has to say, all right, we'll build you a circuit and install it and maintain it for you.
When you've looked at cloud, I'm going to go back to the beginning of this part of the show, when you said that cloud is not a great option for you right now. I definitely want to talk internal, like what you're doing for Indian Health Service internally, maybe email or collaboration, but from when you reach out to the field offices, is the cloud not accessible because of the broadband challenge, even if you get the hardwire, or you don't always have the hardwire to the internet? I mean, there's, I think, things people don't get, because you go out to the field offices often, and a lot of us don't.
In addition to the physical challenges, we've looked at our data and said, you know what, this is patient records. Maybe keeping it internal is better and not going through, for example, the FedRAMP process and others to move our patient data out to a cloud, or perhaps even maybe running a private cloud, which would be within our facilities or within our organization, rather than going to a public cloud. Given that the sensitivity of the data, it's probably something we kind of shy away from just a little bit.
And you mentioned FedRAMP. Obviously, they're looking at doing what they call the high FISMA baseline. So maybe that's an option for you down the road. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about ICD-10. I know people are going to wait with bated breath. My guest today is Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. Now, Commander Reeves, before break, we were talking a lot about the electronic health record system that you guys are upgrading, 80 different applications. It's time for an upgrade. The other big piece of that is the ICD-10 event that's happening. Deadline, as you said, coming up very quickly in October. Talk about how you're handling that. It's a taxonomy thing, I imagine, but it's also a systems testing issue. Give me a sense of how you're making this work, because October is not that far away.
You know, we have several initiatives we're working on, but we had almost pushed some of those aside just to make sure that we could implement ICD-10 in a way that would not impact our facilities. Have a negative impact on our facilities. We started last fall testing at 4 facilities. We picked a diversity. They kind of volunteered, and we sort of told them, I guess, voluntold is the current term. You guys will help us out on this. They have a variety of services. There was a full hospital, a small clinic. So we try to get a good spectrum for our test cases. They've been testing with providers or payers rather, and so we went through a round of alpha testing for our software, beta testing for our software, and we've just now released it. I'm proud of this release because not only is it ICD-10, but we were able to roll in some system enhancements, really just user tweaks, but some other little fixes and enhancements that came out with it. So whether a provider was going to be impacted by ICD-10 or not we were able to roll in some other things that they'd wanted.
So. Give me a sense of that testing, because 4 different facilities, sounds like you're trying to ensure that whether it's a big hospital or small outpatient facility that everybody gets their needs met. Is it a more of a systems issue, meaning can the new system recognize the new standard and then how do they use it? Or take me just the next level down as much as you can.
The system enhancement itself was tough. If you looked at the old ICD-9 codes, there might have been maybe a dozen or so that related to a certain condition. Under ICD-10, that might have gone to 60 or so. You know, it's truly a fantastic expansion of the amount of codes. To ready the system is one thing, but it's also the biller and the provider working together. Provider goes along and they're documenting their encounter in a certain way. They enter everything into the system. It goes over to the biller, who's now got to take what the provider had done and understand that how it relates to a new set of codes, and then make sure the codes go across and that the payer, the medical insurance payer, is on board with that as well. We think we have the system readied so well to the point that now we're focused on that interaction, and it's a non-systems interaction between the biller and the doc or the provider to make sure that their communication is good, and we facilitate that as well.
And I imagine now that these four pilots are done and you're satisfied with the results, you have to then roll it out to everybody across the country. How's that going to work?
We do controlled releases in that we pick facilities. We work with our area office IT staff. They work with the local IT staff and say who's ready, who's gotten this, who can work with us on a particular time frame. We've been doing those over the weekends because a lot of our clinics are ambulatory clinics and they're not open on the weekends, so it makes it easy for those. It's the big hospitals where we have to kind of, we coordinate our staff, their staff, and the medical staff, and have people ready just in case something were to break unexpectedly. Luckily, we've not had any of those either, so we're good.
Are you using a lot of contractors for this help right now, or is this all being done internal staff?
It's the contractors and staff that we've had on board for a long time. We do have a fair number of contract staffs, and we have a fair number of contracts within my organization. We're about a third feds and two-thirds contractors. We bring those folks in for their development work, and it's worked well for us.
What comes next when you look at that October deadline? What has to be done from a systems, from an IT perspective between now and then? Is there a storage issue? Is there a bandwidth issue? It sounds like there's always a bandwidth issue for a lot of people. Is there more of a training issue?
October 1 is a big date, not only for ICD-10, but we're also trying to attest for meaningful use. And with the relaxed rules for meaningful use, we have to attest for a 90-day period in this calendar year. So that kicks off, the attestation period kicks off October 1 if we're going to meet that by December 31st. Meaningful use was announced, if you recall, under the authority of CMS for their Medicare and Medicaid EHR incentive programs. And they provided financial incentives to eligible professionals and eligible providers, including critical access hospitals, as they adopt, implement, and upgrade and demonstrate meaningful use of a certified electronic health record. We are the only certified electronic health record in the federal government. We were the first, and I guess that makes us the only two, but yeah. So we met the 2011 certification, and now we've also met the 2014 certification. The meaningful use initiatives were released in July of 2010. There was details on performance measures that had to be met. There was three stages to meaningful use, and we're currently in stage two, and I believe CMS is going to release stage three very shortly. But stage one focused on collecting and sharing of data. That was sort of a low lift for us. We had a very good electronic health record system already. We met that fairly easily. Stage two has been a little more difficult, but stage two built on the data developed in stage one and emphasize the implementation of advanced clinical processes. Now, it looks like stage three, which will be the ultimate goal, they've stated that, and I think it's on their website, that they will improve patient outcomes, and that's what we're waiting for anyway. They established the standards and the criteria of the structured data, which is all this has to move around in a way that can be shared, between providers and provide a continuum of care. The idea of part of this is that you could, if you were traveling somewhere and you got hurt somewhere else and you walked into a ER or a provider of any kind, they would be able to have access to your record, and so there would not be this idea that we're all carting around paper anymore.
Just let me step back to the ICD-10 real quick, because you talked about the meaningful use, and that's obviously very important. Getting to that October 1st deadline Are there things from an IT perspective that you're worried about? What's your biggest challenge between now and over the next few months?
Biggest challenge for ICD-10 really is getting this release installed and making sure that the facilities have tested and that there's no surprises out there. When we've installed it now at production facilities, I guess that's the term for it, but at clinics and hospitals, we've not turned up anything new, and so that's allowed me to sleep a little more soundly at night.
But as you know, the more you install, the more times you use it, the bigger challenge it is to find that one bug or that hidden hiccup. I imagine you have a plan in place just in case.
CMS and the federal government as a whole is suggesting to facilities and providers to have a backup plan in case, you know, something goes awry right at October 1. It would impact a facility's billing and their revenue stream. So that's why it's important to have that backup plan in place.
Let me move to meaningful use. You went through it. Again, great definition, really understanding of what you have to do. You said you've met stage one. Stage two is a little more difficult. You have to attest to stage two, I guess, between over a 90-day period. How are you guys going to do that? What's the plan for that?
Well, part of that is not only the software release, which was released last fall. So we've had a certified EHR installed everywhere under the stage two or the 2014 certification. Pulling together our network so that the data can move from one facility to another, or that the patient has access to their data where they can view it and engage with their provider, that is the work that's left to be done. And that's what we're rolling out now. So both two of these initiatives both going on at the same time. I know other providers have complained about the pace in which change is coming to the medical community. But, you know, there's not only this, but there's which we're trying to keep up with, but the market itself, you know, the wearables and the demand that in the commercial market space is saying, you know, people are more interested. They're wearing things that track their everything from their movements to their calories, and, you know, the new iWatches and everything. It's all people are truly focused and engaged in their health. And so to have a medical record that simply sits in a provider's office in a paper format is no longer seems acceptable to the patient.
And I imagine that plays into your challenges with the bandwidth, the broadband issues, because somebody would listen to what you're saying and go, oh, just put it in the cloud. Then you can access it from anywhere. It's like your email, right? If you use a Gmail, a Yahoo, any of those accounts, that's basically the cloud. You can, if you're on vacation, you're on business trip, oh, let me check my personal email, boom, there it is. It's not so easy for you guys, so that's the layer of complexity.
Making sure that the access is secured, that the data is secured, is something that I think every federal CIO, or every healthcare CIO would probably tell you that that's their biggest concern. The idea that we could make it available or centralize it is something of a dream, and perhaps someday we will get there. I just need the assurance around it that we can keep it protected. I went to the Health Information Management Systems Society conference this year, the HIMSS conference. Got to see a number of EHR vendors with their electronic health records kind of side by side on the vendor floor. Some I'm very envious of, because if I could put this out in the cloud and wanted to run it as one big system, I wouldn't be installing patches all over the organization. I just have one patch and push it to the cloud, and I'd be done. And so it's an architecture that perhaps is down the road for us. We haven't really spent a lot of time looking at it, but it sure would make life easier if we could.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking the same way at the cloud, going, it could make life a lot easier. Let's take a quick break. We come back. You mentioned security. We'll jump into cyber. We'll also talk about your work with DOD and VA. My guest is Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. Now, Commander Reeves, before a break, we're talking a lot about your big priorities, meaningful use, ICD-10. And you mentioned each of those around cybersecurity kind of plays a role. Obviously, there's a lot around cyber. The OPM breach is on top of everyone's mind. Give me a sense from your perspective. You have a lot of sensitive data. How are you guys looking at cyber and ensuring the safety of that data?
You know, I was really pleased and blessed, I guess, this year. Last summer, I was able to hire a new Chief Information System Security Officer, a new CISO, Rob Collins. He's a great guy, has come in and added some structure and redefinition to our cybersecurity group. And We've hired a number of energetic cybersecurity professionals. They have surprised me at every turn that they brought an awareness and a focus on what we're doing. As a surprise little bonus last fall, we won a National Institute of Standards and Technologies award for our cybersecurity newsletter. It was not even something we had ever submitted before, but they said, hey, you know, we wrote this great newsletter, and it was on, I believe, phishing. Can we submit it? And I was, well, sure, go ahead and submit it. And next thing you know, we won the award. And so, you know, the work of those individuals has really helped raise, I believe, the cybersecurity stance of the organization.
And phishing is such a big deal now. I mean, there's a big concern about targeted phishing attacks. So this was obviously, the newsletter was just more of a training for the rest of the Indian Health Service employees versus the cyber folks.
We have an annual system security awareness training. And a couple of years ago, I got to help edit and develop that. But they really did most of the work. I just kind of stamped the approval on. We had used a number of different training methods before. We'd borrowed trainings from other agencies. We finally decided, you know what, we're unique in that we're a federal healthcare provider, so we need to include not only cybersecurity in our training, but HIPAA, Privacy Act, some other stuff to make it specific to what we're doing.
You have another priority that you didn't mention, but it's coming. The Indian Health Service is moving offices. That's always a big lift. And as the CIO, they're looking at you to say, hey, is our network going to work? They want to know that the infrastructure is going to be there. How are you a part of that decision-making process?
We're moving out of our current facilities. We're spread between two buildings. We're going to move over to the 5600 Fisher's building, Fisher's Lane building. We'll be in there with other agencies. HRSA is in there now. Some others are going in. We're the last ones to move in. There was a big push around shared services, what we could do together, and it makes sense for us to collaborate as we get in there. We have to collaborate also, though, with our 200 facilities across the nation, and so balancing between what can be shared in that building versus what is already installed or shared across our organization is a little bit of a challenge. But we're excited about the move. It will get us all together in a single location. My people are spread out right now on about four different floors. I believe the collaboration will come if I can get them together and get them interacting with each other on a much more frequent basis. So it should be a good thing for us.
And what's the timing? You have to be out of this current building in your new building by the fall, by the winter?
I think tentatively we're moving over all the weekends in November. We'll actually move our data center ahead of that and have that up and running so that we're ready for folks to move in and have all the services set up so that as they move, it should really help out. We'll have a wireless that we don't have in this building. We'll have a different phone system. We'll have new capabilities for both sharing and collaboration.
And are you able to add, for instance, zero client, think client for the workers who work in the building versus, I know the field offices are a different story, where are you moving to laptops for everyone? Any of that kind of refresh happening?
We do a refresh on an annual basis, and we've really gotten most folks over to laptops. It's helped both in our contingency planning. It's helped it helps during snowstorms and other stuff, you know, where people can work from home. When I first came here in 2008, we were not set up so to have that diversity in our workforce, in our work locations. So it's been something of an evolution more than just a flip the switch change, but it's been coming.
All right, very good. Good luck on the move. I know you'll be working some weekends, some late nights as you kind of prepare for that, because moving is never easy. Several times you talked about the electronic health record. Several times you talked about having the only certified, you know, federal health record. So I want to bring up the work you guys are doing with VA, with DOD, with HHS, you know, the Office of National Coordinator. Talk about that collaboration, because a lot of what you guys do obviously is transferable to others, specifically VA and DOD.
My office, and specifically, I met last fall with representatives of the DOD, and we've met with the VA. We've met with the VA actually multiple times. Collaboration, where it's asking, well, you know, we're presented with this problem, and have you guys seen this, and what do you do about it? One of the things that we all seem to want to collaborate on more is provider credentialing systems. We actually share doctors in many ways. Some of our doctors, for example, they'll work for us and then perhaps work for the VA or have privileges at a VA facility. And managing their credentials or the credentialing for them at each facility, they think, well, you know what? It's the same doctor. They're doing the same thing. We ought to have one central way of being able to do this. And I know it's something that the VA and the DOD have worked on, and they've invited us to the conversations. We'll also participate together in the health data exchange or the health information exchange. So as a patient, for example, might leave active duty with the DOD, ultimately the goal would be that they could bring their records so that if the same patient then were to get care at a VA facility and an IHS facility, we would all know, the things we need to know about that person's record. Our electronic health record system, as I mentioned, is related to theirs. And although the DOD is working on something different, we're still very closely tied to the VA. But we're watching what happens with the DOD in their electronic health record. Perhaps there's even more opportunities to collaborate down the road.
When DOD went out with their RFIs and RFPs for their electronic health record, did you guys throw your hat into the ring at all? Did you talk to them about maybe they could borrow bits and pieces of your system? How much conversation have you had with them?
We've not had a lot specifically about the RFP, but I will tell you that we noticed that in some of the things that they're requiring for their systems are some of the same things that we require for ours, and so that's why we're watching very closely from the sidelines, just to figure out what they're going to do. They operate in a different environment, so they've got their own unique needs, but a large contract for them, and so we're excited about what they might do. We feel like they could actually drive the market change a little bit and bring some of the capabilities back in to a more commonplace.
You mentioned the doctor credentialing system. Is that something you said you're currently collaborating with VA, DOD? Is that something that's in the works? How do you do it now, and how would you like to see it done?
Right now, we do it basically at every facility, and it's distributed. It's a manual process. We don't have a good handle on how to do it, but it is a need at every facility. In our meetings with the VA and the DOD, we've watched what they're doing, and they said that they've invited us to the table to talk about it, but we haven't come up right now with a solution to it all. I believe that they're in the same boat we are. There's just got to be a better way to do this.
Unfortunately for us, we are out of time. My guest today was Commander Mark Reeves, the CIO and Director of IT for the Indian Health Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Commander Reeves, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.